Welcome to the Tax Policy Podcast, produced by the Tax Foundation in Washington. Visit us online at www.taxfoundation.org.
Hi, I'm Scott Hodge, President of the Tax Foundation. Welcome to another edition of the Tax Foundation's Tax Policy Podcast. I'm very pleased to be joined today by Peter Merrill, who directs the National Economic Consulting Group at PricewaterhouseCoopers. The group provides economic analysis of legislative and regulatory proposals, as well as general economic consulting services. Peter is also one of the Washington's leading experts on international tax issues and is an economic advisor to the International Tax Policy Forum, a nonprofit organization that sponsors nonpartisan academic research and hosts conferences to provide and promote informed dialogue on international tax issues. Peter, welcome.
Well, thank you, Scott.
Well, you recently wrote a very fascinating article in the trade publication Tax Notes titled The Corporate Tax Conundrum. And you point out that while the U.S. has the second highest overall corporate tax rate in the OECD, we also have one of the lowest rates of corporate tax collections among our major trading partners. And you know, there are a lot of folks in Washington who say, well, that's a, you know, this paradox is the result of creative tax shelters or tax havens. And you identify three different explanations for this paradox. Could you talk about those for a minute?
Well, sure, Scott. As you know, the United States has the second highest combined corporate tax rate among the 30 OECD countries, yet was tied with Hungary for the fourth lowest corporate tax revenues as a percent of GDP in 2004. And three possible explanations for this disparity are, one, the U.S. tax base might be narrower than in other OECD countries due to accelerated capital cost recovery. Two, U.S. corporations might arrange their financial affairs to reduce reported income. And three, U.S. businesses might choose to operate outside of regular corporate form. So data collected by the Institute for Fiscal Studies in the UK does suggest that equipment depreciation is more accelerated in the U.S. than the average OECD country. And there was still in effect temporary bonus depreciation rules in 2004. However, this is really only part of the story. Behavior responses are important too. High corporate tax rates encourage use of debt finance, discourage the sale of depreciated corporate assets, and discourage repatriation of income earned abroad. And there's a large body of economic research that shows that corporate taxes affect each of these decisions: debt, gain realization, and repatriations. But there's a third explanation that I highlight in my paper because I think it has received relatively little attention, yet appears to be the single most important explanation to this corporate tax conundrum. And that's the choice of legal form in which to undertake business activities. Rather than organize as a regular corporation, U.S. businesses can be set up as partnerships, S corporations, and limited liability companies that are not subject to entity-level tax. The U.S. Had the highest share of unincorporated business for firms reporting more than $1 million of income among the OECD countries. Now, research by Roger Gordon, Joel Slemrod, and others shows that the decision regarding choice of legal form of organization is quite sensitive to the difference between the corporate and individual income tax rates. And as you know, the Tax Reform Act of 86 reduced the top individual income tax rate below the top corporate tax rate. And this change, along with the enactment of limited liability company laws in many states, caused a huge shift away from the use of regular corporations. The share of business income reported by pass-through entities increased by 75% from 29% in 1987 to 52% in 2004. One way to think about this is that if the same share of business income were earned through regular corporations in 2004, as was the case in 1987, corporate income tax revenue would have been 45% higher, and U.S. corporate revenues relative to GDP would have been around the median for the OECD countries.
That's pretty extraordinary. I think we get focused on debates over individual taxes and corporate taxes, and we don't tend to, at least in Washington, tend to see them as separate when we're seeing a blurring in the lines, it seems, where the growth in these pass-through entities has been so staggering that I think most Americans would be shocked to realize that there's more business income being taxed on the individual side than the corporate side. What what are we to make of this trend in the future of tax reform? Can we tax or can we reform one side of the code and not the other, or are we going to have to rationalize these systems at some point down the line? Because we really, in many respects, have two ways of taxing business. And that doesn't seem to make sense, I think, to me.
Right. Well, one way to think about what's been going on in the increased use of past forms of business organization is what you might call self-help corporate integration. Businesses seeking a way to avoid double taxation of corporate income at the entity and the shareholder level. So the reduction in dividend taxes in 2003 has sort of mitigated this double tax, but not really eliminated the disadvantage of organizing as a regular corporation. So, you know, in my view, you know, the ultimate tax reform answer is corporate integration. But in the meantime, you know, businesses are attempting to use a form of organization that does avoid some of the disadvantage of the double tax structure.
Well, this has pretty serious implications for something like, you know, reforms to AMT or ways of trying to fix the AMT. If Congress goes out and tries to raise the top individual rate, it seems to me it's going to hit these pass-through entities the most.
Absolutely. You certainly cannot think about the competitiveness of business in the United States by looking only at business in the corporate form, because as we've been discussing, over half the income is earned outside of corporate solution. And so, for example, imposition of a surtax on individuals would surely raise the cost of doing business for those businesses outside of the corporate form.
And in a strange way, how would that change the balance between corporate forms and individual forms? Would it then make it more advantageous to be a C-corp rather than an S-corp? I'm kind of speculating now.
Well, you know, certainly there is evidence from Europe in a very interesting paper by Dumuy and Nicodem, which looks at the corporate rate reductions in Europe and notes that those reductions have been taking place since the early 80s. In other words, the U.S. Lowered the corporate rate in 86 and then bumped it up back to 35. And since that time has kept it at 35, whereas, as you know, in Europe and in the OECD, we've seen, a persistent and constant reduction in corporate rates, so that and now the average corporate rate in the OECD is about 12 percentage points less than in the U.S. And what is quite striking is, at least in the European Union, despite very substantial corporate rate reductions, the share of corporate tax revenues relative to GDP has increased. And this seems to be actually the reverse of the U.S. phenomenon, that lowering the corporate rates in Europe has led to a shift in the form of business organization from unincorporated to the corporate sector.
That's fascinating. And it kind of brings up a question that came out of last summer's Treasury conference hosted by Secretary Hank Paulson on corporate tax reform, and you were a panelist on that, and I seem to remember you addressing a very interesting issue on which gives a bigger bang to the buck, a corporate rate reduction or something like a bonus depreciation or an incentive credit, and you made the case for a corporate rate cut. What was your reasoning on that?
Well, certainly the traditional economic view has been that accelerated depreciation is a more efficient way to encourage investment than a rate cut, because part of the benefit of a rate cut goes to investments that have been made in the past. However, there are a number of, I think, quite substantial changes in the U.S. economy over the last few decades that causes me to question the conventional wisdom. Globalization is one of those very important changes, but secondly, a very profound change in the structure of the U.S. economy away from traditional manufacturing to services and the development of intangible assets rather than physical capital. And as you know, the development of intangible property involves expenses which are not subject to depreciation. We're talking about research-type expenses, which are mostly wages, as well as marketing expenses, again, mostly wages. And as a result, those types of investments, you know, in intangible capital really are not benefited by changes in the depreciation schedule. They already are written off, as you would under a cash flow tax. At the same time, with globalization, we now have companies operating cross-border, both U.S. companies operating abroad, foreign companies operating in the U.S. Indeed, U.S. companies most recent year earned over a quarter of their income offshore. And obviously, when you have these cross-border flows, the effect of the corporate rate is very important in two dimensions. One, in terms of where should companies invest? You know, should foreign companies invest in the U.S. or in other jurisdictions, and where should the U.S. companies invest? And then there's simply the issue of where should, you know, profits be reported. And while we have, you know, stringent transfer pricing rules, there are, you know, certainly legitimate planning techniques for companies to arrange to earn more of their income in lower tax jurisdictions. And as a result, I believe that, you know, reducing the corporate rate can have as salutary an effect for the U.S. economy as increased depreciation for physical assets.
Well, that's interesting, and it kind of raises or leads to my next question, which is about who pays the corporate tax, because that's certainly one of the most debated questions in tax policy, and the International Tax Policy Forum is hosting a conference soon on who pays the corporate tax. Can you give me some a preview of the conference and how it's going to approach the question and what the economic literature is now saying about the incidence of the corporate tax?
Well, I'm happy to give a preview on the International Tax Policy Forum conference, which might note is December 18th at the Urban Institute. And you can register on the Urban Institute website for the conference. But as you know, past tax reforms have been judged not only by their effect on revenues, but also their effect on the distribution of the tax burden across income classes. Indeed, as you know, the 1986 Tax Reform Act was designed to be both revenue neutral and distributionally neutral. But one of the really difficult questions in preparing these distributional tables is how to allocate the burden of the corporate tax. We all know that corporations can't bear the burden of the tax. Only people can bear the burden of the tax. But the question is, who? Is it shareholders, all capital owners, workers, consumers, and so forth? Well, it turns out that Treasury, the Congressional Budget Office, and the Joint Committee on Taxation all use different methodologies for allocating the corporate tax burden. And we know from Arnold Harberger's work that the distribution of the corporate tax burden is likely to be quite different in an open economy versus a closed economy. So in this conference, we're going to be exploring how the increased openness of the U.S. economy is affecting the distribution of the corporate tax burden. And, you know, just to preview the results, a more open economy means that capital owners will bear less of the burden of the corporate tax because capital has the ability to flow out of the United States to other jurisdictions in response to higher corporate tax rates. So with increased mobility of capital, we would expect that more of the burden of the corporate tax would fall on U.S. workers.
Because they can't obviously move to Ireland to take advantage of a lower tax rate.
Well, that's a pretty drastic step to take. So, yes, workers are far less mobile than capital in today's economy. And this is what, in fact, some recent research shows. And so we will be summarizing some of the recent research, which includes papers by Michael Devereux, and there'll be a new paper by Desai, Foley, and Hines on this same subject, as well as you know, review of a paper from a couple years ago by Kevin Hassett. We'll also be looking at some new computable general equilibrium-based modeling that's been done by Bill Randolph at the Congressional Budget Office that extends the Harberger model to, you know, look at an open economy with, you know, different, you know, corporate, non-corporate sectors and traded and non-traded sectors of the economy. And that paper suggests that about 70% of the burden of the corporate tax ultimately falls on workers.
Well, that would seem to me to have a profound effect or impact on the overall debate about corporate tax reform, and at least cutting the corporate rate. And how would you see this helping the case, if you will, for cutting the corporate tax rate? Could it break down some of the typical complaints or criticisms we have of that kind of policy?
Well, certainly one goal of this conference is to focus the attention on the issue of how to distribute the corporate tax burden, and hopefully to, you know, encourage the Joint Committee, the Congressional Budget Office, and the Treasury Department to look at the body of recent research on this issue and to consider, you know, whether the methodologies that are currently used really are consistent, you know, with the best economic thinking. You know, certainly, in my view, the U.S. is quite an outlier if we look at the policies to corporate tax. We now see, you know, many countries that we have historically, you know, thought of as countries that, you know, were really hostile to the notion of, you know, reducing taxes on corporations, now having rates far below the U.S. And this, you know, includes, you know, many labor governments in Europe that have reduced corporate tax rates, you know, well below the U.S. level. And, you know, you have to ask the question, you know, what do these countries know that the U.S. doesn't? And I think what they intuitively understand, particularly in the highly integrated, you know, European Union global market, is that high corporate rates are, in fact, leading to out-migration of corporate headquarters and corporate investment, which detrimentally affects workers, so that it's actually in the interest of the workers, who after all are the electorate, to have a tax environment that encourages corporate capital formation.
Well, I hope that the conference is successful in advancing those ideas, because it's absolutely critical as we go into next year to elevate these as part of the both the political and policy discussion here in Washington, and hopefully we can begin to change some of those views. I appreciate you joining me today. This has been fascinating.
Thank you, Scott. Glad to participate.
The Tax Policy Podcast is produced by the Tax Foundation, a nonpartisan, nonprofit tax research group that has monitored fiscal policy at the federal, state, and local levels since 1937. Please help support our programs by making a tax-deductible contribution at www.taxfoundation.org.